Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm J.R. Ross.
And I'm Sean Johnson.
Welcome to Rewind, Wisconsin's Look at This Week in the Capitol. Sean, first off, thanks for filling in for Steve.
Yeah.
He's off spoiling some grandkids. We've been talking about transportation this show for, it seems like, forever. I want to talk about it again, though. This week, we had the agency briefings with Joint Finance Committee. And DOT was a much-anticipated hearing, right? In the middle of this testimony from Secretary Ross, Scott Walker takes to Twitter and tweets, "Let's be clear. I don't support spending less on K-12 education. And what's in my budget, I will veto a gas tax increase."
It's almost like the governor knew what was going to happen at this committee hearing and that legislators were going to pick on his transportation secretary there. He kind of stole some thunder there with that tweet. If you look at a lot of the coverage that came out of that that hearing, which was kind of great if you're into contentious budget hearings, it had a lot going on. A lot of focus on what Scott Walker said in that tweet and a very hardline stand against any kind of a gas tax increase.
Well, let's look at the Scott Walker positions, all right, on gas tax increase. We were both in a parking lot of a Culver's.
I remember
off
that.
Of Highway 59 and I-3990. I think it was last summer sometime.
Yeah, September.
And Scott Walker said, "I will veto any budget that increases the gas tax or registration rate without a corresponding tax cut." In January, State of the State, he said, "We have enough money for roads." And now this. Do you think he's moving the goalposts, Sean? Or is he fine-tune the rhetoric about the gas tax?
We know that Assembly Republicans feel like he's moving the goalposts because that position in September they viewed as, okay, if there's money in the general fund for a tax cut in the general fund, we can increase taxes in the transportation fund or increase revenue in the transportation fund. We don't know how they would do that. So you fast forward to revenue estimates, there's more money in the general fund than expected. They felt like they could get it done. Cut taxes in the general fund, increase taxes in transportation, but that seems to be off the table now. I mean, the governor is really as focused as you can be on this no tax pledge when it comes to transportation, and he's not going to budge.
I get the impression that Scott Walker's pretty much always been in this position of no tax increases. It's just that the language has changed, and I don't know if he realized, oh, wait a second, these guys can figure out a way to meet this condition,
right,
or what happened, but it's been clear. I mean, Scott Walker does not want to sign a gas tax increase, doesn't want any tax increase for a couple reasons, from what I get the impression. One, he's not a fan of raising taxes, period. And two, well, y'all think he's going to run for president again someday. You don't want to have a record of a tax increase in your history if you're a Republican running for president. I mean, I think maybe it's not a driving factor, but the Walker record is no new taxes, right?
It's a clean sell for him, and he actually, in his early, he's not officially a candidate for governor again, but
yes,
in his early campaign material, you see him talking about standing up against people who would want to raise the gas tax. It's interesting, he's talking about people in his own party here.
I know, it's also a theme with education, too, we might see from him come election time. But I want to get to, speaking of defending his record on taxes, Secretary Ross, no relation, by the way, was pretty adamant about this budget being the right answer to transportation. So let's watch a few minutes of him testifying and grilled this week by Luther Olson and others in the Finance Committee.
Normally, secretaries say, "We need more money, you got to help us." But you guys are saying, "No, we don't need any more money. There's no problem." So okay, these projects cost this,
yes,
kind of money, and we didn't have that kind of money. Correct?
Well,
so the need is there, yeah, but we don't have the revenue. Would you say that's a fair analysis of our problem?
I would say if you overspend, you're going to have a
well,
need
are
for
we
more
overspent?
Revenue. We are overspent from the fact that we made too many commitments to large enumerated projects.
Were they needed?
And well, a lot of projects are needed.
Okay, what I'm saying,
yes,
though, is,
yeah,
the projects were needed.
Yeah.
They cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that. That's the way,
yes,
it is.
Yes.
But we don't have the money. It seems like we're on a track where we're stalling everything out. It's going to cost us more money. We're not raising revenue. And we're going to be spiraling down into a hole where it will cost us so much money to bring our roads up to shape that we'll never get it done.
I'm answering this with the fact that the feds believe they allocate enough money for us to take care of these projects in a timely manner, $900 million a year towards these projects. We chose to spend more than that. And I go back to the cost of enumeration, which was not accurate.
You know, the last budget said, you know, we're not going to kick the can, but we did. And the budget before, we said the same thing, and we kicked the can down the road. And we're getting to the point that some of our major infrastructure needs maintenance, obviously, but also needs repair because they're of the age where you cannot just put a layer of finish over it, and it'll last maybe 2 to 3 years, and then you've got to rip it all out to majorly redo it. And so we're at the point where we've got to get a big picture plan of what we're going to do, and infrastructure is critical, not just to keep projects going, but because it's very important for economic development and public safety.
Secretary, what's your position on tolls?
Yeah, I don't have a position on tolling. It's not included in this budget.
What's your position on the gas tax?
It's not included in this budget. This is the budget.
What's your position on the gas tax?
This is the position. The position I take is this budget because I believe in this budget.
Now, Sean, Secretary Ross got a less than friendly reception, I would say, during that hearing testifying. But Luther Olson said something when he was questioning Secretary Ross. He said, maybe we're ready to bite the bullet and raise revenues.
Yeah.
That also caused Luther some issues this week, because Steve Noss came out and said that's not the position of the Senate Republicans.
During the hearing,
yes.
Noss releases a statement. And by the end of the hearing, Luther Olson had walked that back. Luther said, we. He said, I actually didn't mean all of us.
Yes. And then Scott Fitzgerald, which earlier the next day, said, look, I don't have the votes for a gas tax increase in my caucus right now. And oh, by the way, we couldn't override the governor if we wanted to. Even if we were to be able to raise a gas tax and he vetoed it, you're not going to see a Republican-controlled legislature override a governor veto of Governor Walker's, period. What else do you take away from Secretary Ross's testimony, especially about the federal stuff, the federal money going to transportation?
Yeah, every time he talked about why we can't build more, and it was essentially because we're maxed out on federal matching funds on these projects. And he kept telling these legislators, basically, we got to finish building what we have now before we take on new projects. So essentially, you're talking about maybe 2024 before they start even considering new stuff. That did not go over well in the room. But every time he talked about that federal money, you saw some heads shaking no up there by lawmakers on joint finance, because, you know, essentially, if you take on more projects and you have more revenue for it, you'd get more matching federal funds. So I think what the federal government has told the state of Wisconsin is that your revenue doesn't match up with your project appetite, basically. One way you could fix that is don't build anymore. That's Secretary Ross's position. A lot of lawmakers on finance, though, seem to be saying, hey, we could build more if we had more revenue.
Yeah, I don't know if he won many fans after his testimony this week, especially with Speaker Robin Voss. We caught him yesterday after some of your rules met about next week's calendar, and he talked about if you don't think there's a revenue problem with transportation, you're delusional. So I pressed him, do you think Secretary Ross is delusional? He said, yeah, he's crazy, his words now, not mine, if you think there's not a spending or a revenue problem with transportation. I get the impression that these guys are frustrated with the administration about revenues for transportation, but they don't have an answer yet of how to get around the governor's position, which is, going back to that tweet, no new gas tax.
Right.
Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to a kind of a competitive point, though, almost. I mean, we have crossed that threshold that Republicans haven't before in terms of how willing they've been to publicly fight over this issue. I mean, calling a transportation secretary for your governor delusional, it's highly unlikely. But what do they do? I mean, do they pass? How much does Robin Voss want to kind of dig in his heels on this, knowing that the governor's not going to budge and that Senator Fitzgerald does not want to even consider an override?
Now, Ross was a little in the hot seat this week. We had AG Brad Schimmel up there testifying about the DOJ budget. And one big point of contention for his agency has been that these untested rape kits. Now, when I've talked to people about this issue, they have said that the Department of Justice has lost the PR battle a little bit about this, because we have, I think, a backlog of 6,000 untested kits. Now, the explanation is some of these have accumulated over years because, and Schimmel talked about this, the victim didn't press charges. So the victim went to a hospital, got tested, said, you know what, I don't want to press charges. So that's a big factor. Two, the person confessed, the attacker, so they need to test the kit. Or this person was caught in another crime, and so they need to test because of that. Nonetheless, there are still these untested kits, and it's a PR problem for Schimmel. But this week he insisted there is no backlog. So let's watch a video of how he described the situation at DOJ.
So I want to start with the rape kit backlog. I know you characterize it as not being a backlog, but I guess for me, anything pre-2011 that's been waiting for a while, especially when you haven't heard from a department, would be a backlog. So how many have been tested now?
We have 450 at Bodie Laboratories undergoing testing right now.
To date on the current, you've tested 800 to 900.
Yes.
Each of the last 2 years, I think.
Yes, Senator.
You're talking about the backlog.
I am addressing the 6,000 rape kit backlog that's been a backlog for about 2.5 years. So,
it's actually been, these kits have been collected over several decades. They've been sitting in evidence rooms now, some of them, for well over 10 years.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. That actually makes that worse. There are many people who are not being served right now that I think need to, and I think survivors deserve similar attention to what you've done with opioid awareness. Especially given with the test kits that it does rely on survivor consent, I feel like the state should be doing everything possible to reach out to these people.
By whatever resources I have that I can commit to this, we will do that to make sure our message is comprehensive.
Now, Sean, I don't know that A.G. Schimmel convinces critics on this issue that they're doing enough, but Joint Finance Co-Chair Alberta Darling was fairly sympathetic, stressed that, okay, you guys are the ones coming in, are being tested, that's a good thing. So I think he's making some progress with some of those folks, getting some more advocates on his side about this issue. Do you have any thoughts about that?
The tougher sell for him is that he's saying that these 6,000 kits that we naturally in conversation refer to as a backlog. He's saying that's not really a backlog. I mean, that's a tough sell. And, you know, there have been some places elsewhere in the country that have done kind of bulk testing. Like, we're going to get the testing done first, get the permission later. He's not taking that approach because he's going to have that slower approach to testing these kits. You know, that number's not going to go down in a hurry.
Well, one effort they have announced is that they're trying to go back and publicize to past victims, say, hey, if your kit hasn't been tested and you want it tested, let us know. We'd like you to reach out to us and get that done. I'm not sure how numbers are about that yet, but they're trying to find ways to address this. I think at one point he said in the end, of the 6,000, about 3,800 to 4,000 will be tested. That still leaves a couple thousand untested, which I'm going to bet you money will be a campaign ad next fall against Brad Schimmel.
I think that's pretty good bet. Maybe something about coins in there also.
Great segue. He said this week, now, those of you at home who aren't know about the coins, they're challenge coins, a lot of times law enforcement. Brad Schimmel had ones stamped with K-A-E-D, which is the motto he has for DOJ, which stands for kick ass every day. The old one was, we exist to our serve, or something like that, which he said was...
It's not as catchy, whatever it was.
So he said, if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't buy them because I didn't know how much they were going to cost, but he still has some left. And he defended the idea of challenge coins, that these are good things for morale in law enforcement. And Dale Kianga teed him up saying, hey, talk about morale for police officers right now in this country. So,
yeah, so I mean, he's got a defense for it. At the same time, he did say, I wouldn't have done it if I'd known how much it was going to cost, or I wouldn't do it again. He referenced the cost being higher, $10,000 for 2,000 coins.
So one last issue you want to hit on is DNR. I mean, it seems like there is this a lot of focus on this magazine, which the Walker administration wants to kill. It's not a black hole for money or anything.
No.
It does okay.
Right.
But it's the idea to them of being in the business of producing a magazine, of being in what they think should be a private sector effort. So let's watch that video real quick.
You always wonder what the hot issue of the budget is, and based on constituent feedback, it is the subscriptions to the DNR magazine. 100 years old. I understand there's a lot of things in this budget that seem to come out of some committee about eliminating unnecessary functions or something, but 88,000 subscribers and growing, I understand. This is what we're hearing about. No taxpayer money. It's bad enough that a lot of people who don't, you know, older readers, people who truly embrace the natural resource conservation, outdoor recreation culture in Wisconsin, are disappointed or upset that they're going to be losing something that they enjoy.
I do. I really do appreciate the loyalty of the subscribers. It's just when I'm looking at the kind of reach that we can have with much less manpower involved with our digital media outreach, the fresher content, the two-way communication, and really kind of falling in line with what we're seeing media companies doing across the country.
From my perspective, it doesn't appear that you're actually doing your job as a regulatory agency. And when I asked you about that, you said that you're educating. But then when I asked you about if climate change should be a part of the education process of the DNR to the public, you said you're a regulatory agency. So I'm trying to figure out what the DNR's core mission is here. Are you regulating? Are you educating? How does the DNR magazine not fit into that? And does your decision to end it have anything to do with the climate change debate, even though an overwhelming consensus of global scientists agree that climate change is real and man-made? What's going on with the DNR? And it's not funny, it's real. I think taking that off the website was a poor decision, and it made a lot of people think that the decision to end the DNR magazine had something to do with the climate change topic being removed from your website.
Yeah, it didn't. This was purely a business decision, Representative. And again, you expect us to be as accountable and responsible with the resources that we're entrusted with. And when we talk about core mission of education, we have lots of educational bodies out there. The UW does lots of research on climate change and publishes lots of articles on that. The Wisconsin K-12 education system does things like that. Really, in this world of limited and finite resources, it's my responsibility to prioritize the work that we do and to be able to put out a good quality work product to the citizens that all of you represent. And I take issue with a lot of the things you said, and I wasn't laughing at the idea of climate change. Merely what I'm, befuddled by is the idea that, really recognizing that some things that were on our website were more definitive in one direction than what we thought was appropriate for us to dive into. I want our folks to be focused on the management on the ground and making sure that we're managing and doing the best we can to protect the resources and all the other things that we manage.
Let's be honest, Sean. These agency briefings aren't meant to be full of praise for the departments. They're about criticizing things. So when you're seeing these videos that we're showing, it's trying to catch the flavor of how things go. It's wall-to-wall complaining sometimes, right? But how is the DNR doing with this PR battle over the magazine? Do you think they're making any headway with lawmakers about this?
Well, I mean, we know that they seem to have inspired this nostalgia campaign. people feeling some love for the printed word again because subscriptions have surged for this magazine. So if they move forward with this plan to get rid of the magazine, they're going to have kind of a headache refunding all that money.
At a cost, too, I believe.
Strictly as a budget decision, it is fascinating at these budget briefings because you learn what catches people's attention. Representative Hintz referenced it there. This is not a big dollar issue. This is ending this magazine is not going to mean more money for, in general fund for schools or something. It's program revenue, but it's gotten people's attention in a big way. And so Kathy Stepp ended up talking quite a bit about it.
All right, let's talk some politics. All right. So we've been waiting to see who's going to run against Scott Walker next year, right? Well, to pull back for a second, if Scott Walker runs, right? That if gets smaller every day, I think.
You mean the guy that's introducing candy factories in Capitol press conferences, maybe not a candidate?
So Tim Cullen this week says, I'm not going to run, which is kind of a surprise in some ways. I mean, here's a guy who I think it was a couple weeks ago opened a bank account to raise money. He changed his registration with the state so that he could actually run for governor. He says he's running for governor. He's been traveling the state for months talking to people, and he says he's not going to run because why? Because raising the money is demeaning. Mm-hmm. Should he have been surprised that raising money is going to be tough in this environment, Sean?
I don't think so. I mean, I know it was different circumstances, but he went through a very similar thought process a few years ago when he was considering running ahead of the recall election. And I remember that press conference saying, essentially, I wasn't going to be able to raise enough money in time to get out there. So that was a compressed campaign. It would have been different circumstances. But here you had more time, but same conclusion. He decided that a few million bucks wasn't going to cut it.
Well, the other thing he said was that he was calling his friends to raise money and was getting positive response, but the number wasn't as big as he hoped it would be when he was calling sometimes. And then he talked about, well, I've been calling my friends, next I have to call strangers. And I don't want to call strangers to ask for money. That's demeaning. Again, this his word, demeaning. 4 hours a day, he said, on the phone, every day you'd have to do to raise the money to run for governor. And if you could do that, he said, if you can get to $12 million, because Mary Burke in 2014 raised about 12, about $5 million of her own, and still got outspent 2-1 by Governor Walker. He's projecting, if he made $12 million, hit that point, that Walker will hit $40 million plus. He outspent 3-1 this time. Mm-hmm. does any Democrat running for governor have to realize that they're going to be outspent and find a way anyway?
It could be why you're seeing a lot of people who could potentially self-fund being floated out there among the names for governor. I think they realize that it's going to be expensive. It was interesting to hear Senator Cullen talk us through that thought process pretty transparently. You know, he basically stepped right up to that abyss and decided he didn't want anything to do with it. Because just raising money on your own, yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle. I mean, there is outside money that would come in, but on the Democratic side, you're going to be relying on a lot of national money to flow into Wisconsin in a way that in years before Act 10, when unions were bigger here, the teachers' union was bigger here, you could kind of bank on them helping you out. You can't bank on that in the same way now.
I thought it was interesting that Cullen talked about how I didn't have to do this for my state Senate campaigns. He seems like a throwback to a time in Wisconsin politics when there weren't big money campaigns. I don't know if some of these folks have realized that it is a big money game now. Like, these numbers are for real. Scott Walker is the single best fundraiser I have ever seen in Wisconsin. And quite frankly, probably ever will. The guy is a money machine. And Cullen seemed almost taken aback by what the reality is anymore of these races unless you're a self-funder. So now we've got a list we've been talking about for weeks. We can pull the graphic. We've got Andy Gronick, who's talked about running. We've got Jefferson County DA Susan Happ, who ran for AG in 14, making her mind between AG and governor this time. Dane County's have Joe Parisi, so they make a decision next couple of months, I believe. State Rep Dana Walks, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, Milwaukee Attorney Matt Flynn. There's a Madison businessman, Mark Bakken, who I've been trying to get in touch with, I haven't reached yet. His name's been floated. What's this say to you about the field that we have, possible field for Democrats right now?
It seems like it's wide open at this point. I mean, it doesn't seem like it. It is wide open at this point. There's no name in there that's going to scare everybody else out of the race. I mean, Ron Kind was a maybe that he could have scared a lot of people out of the race, especially since there are Western Wisconsin candidates being floated. If Kind had gotten in the race, it'd be hard for them to get in. Kind's not doing it. There's no big name that's going to just suck up all the money or scare names out of the field. So if you're a Democrat who's got thoughts about it, In this election cycle, why not?
And it seems like, you know, Gronick has success in business, so it's an assumption he has some personal money to put in. Dana Walks, an attorney who's done fairly well for himself, there's an assumption he can put some money in.
Sounds very much like he's made that decision that he wants to do this, even though he has not yet officially either.
Assumption in Mark Bakken that he's been successful, he could. But what we don't know is how big a check can you write? Mm-hmm. And if you write that check, does Governor Walker just go to his donors, hey, they're trying to buy my seat, you need to help me more? He's got, what Walker has an advantage is a national network of small dollar donors. And it costs a lot of money to reach these folks because they're sending out emails and letters like regularly, but you can hit them up for $50 every time. And when it comes to like October of 2018, you hit them up and they come through time and time and time again. And those donations add up after a while.
And you can't recreate what Walker did there because he's got that national list from the recall. I mean, he was in a national race in Wisconsin. It built up. It's why he rents that list out to national candidates to this day. People want access to those names. And so, you know, if you're a Democrat, you're probably never going to, you're not going to outspend Scott Walker and his allies in Wisconsin in a governor's race.
And running for president, as much of a setback as it was for him politically for his future, I mean, it didn't hurt the list. Like, he didn't, like, have fewer donors after running for president, look at 2018. Now, so the caveat is self-funder. And we may have one of those, like in the U.S. Senate race. So Nicole Schneider, the daughter-in-law of former Schneider trucking exec Don Schneider, her name floated this week, possible Republican running for office. Now, when I've talked to people, the feedback I've gotten is that she has a nice background in healthcare and social work, but the Schneider name and the Schneider money give her extra juice that somebody else in her same resume without those two factors probably wouldn't get. What is the attraction of self-funders, do you think, in a Senate race?
If you're going to have a primary, there's pretty big attraction there because you know that you're going to not get drowned out by the other candidates. And again, if you can come out up front and show that potential for fundraising, you're going to scare some names out of the race potentially. If you've got a bunch of state lawmakers, for example, who are running in a primary who can't self-fund, they don't have that background, that's kind of an anyone's game type primary. You got wealthy people in there, it changes things altogether.
Well, so Kevin Nicholson, who is a former Marine and a business consultant, he got a pledge this week. Now, he's not in the race officially, but he's going to run. From this new super PAC, backed by Dick Uihlein, who's an Illinois businessman, becoming a mega donor for Republicans in Wisconsin races. He's put $2 million in up front to help Nicholson get in the race. What I've kind of heard is that, you know, in this race right now, and remember, we're March 31st of 2017. There's a long way to go to August of 18. But Eric Hovde, Madison businessman, he's got his own money. Nicole Schneider has her own money. Those two could freeze the donor field a little bit, because if you're a Republican donor right now going, okay, I've got these five or six people that I'm running, what do I do? Is there a clear front runner? Kevin Nicholson, $2 million super PAC goes a long way. But if I'm a donor, I go, well, he doesn't need my help because he's got a super PAC doing it for him. So it seems like it could put some pressure on Leah Vukmir, Scott Fitzgerald, who said this week he is overwhelmed right now with the Capitol and can't think of running for the U.S. Senate, and Del Kienga. Do they have to get in earlier than they may have wanted to start raising that money? If they can't raise the money to match the self-funders or the super PAC, does Aaliyah Vukmir, can she run on the base she has with Talk Radio Milwaukee and the reputation she has from being in the Capitol for better than a decade now, you know, a bona fide conservative with a record? That's something I'm going to watch about this race. How's the money flow, and does it flow between now and next summer?
The more candidates get in, I mean, if Schneider's in, if Nicholson's in, those are unknown. I mean, they're wealthy people, but they are unknown. That does open a door, I think, for somebody like Aaliyah Vukmir, who has an established conservative bona fide record. But the financing is going to be a challenge when to get your message out there. Just remember the last primary that that Eric Hovde was in, and Tommy Thompson ultimately emerged from that. It was a pretty bruising primary for Republicans. They probably don't want to repeat that, but you know, there's early signs that this one could get crowded as well.
And Fitzgerald repeated this week he does not want to see a crowded primary. His brother ran in 2012. Tommy Thompson emerged bruised, financially depleted, and then Tammy Baldwin had time to define him. Dick Uihlein, his statement about the super PAC, said, I want to avoid 2012. They're trying very hard, and Tammy Baldwin would love nothing more than these guys to spend all their money going after each other, go as far right as possible, and have everybody's herself.
I think she'd like Sheriff David Clark to get in the race also, from the looks of it.
She uses him quite often in her fundraising appeals. Yep. So let's hit stock report real quick from West Politics. So Rise, we have Tony Evers.
You said him last week, too.
Anytime you have an incumbent who is outraising an opponent 2-1, who is on the air, who has an outside group on the air for him, and his opponent is not on TV, has a radio ad, but isn't on TV, that's a good thing. And we've seen no signs yet that Lowell Holtz has really got a groundswell support from conservatives to kind of come there and combat the Evers advantage of being an incumbent, getting 70% in the primary in February. I mean, there's almost an air of inevitability times about Tony Evers. But there is a debate tonight, I think.
Wisconsin Public Television, if you want to, you know, switch over from Wisconsin Eye for just an hour.
Just an hour.
Watch that debate if you want to on public TV.
So now mixed this week, we have Corey Mason, state lawmaker from Racine. He's looking at running for mayor. And now what's interesting is Mayor Dickert is stepping down to go join this Great Lakes organization. He's leaving in the summer. It means it's going to be a special election sometime, maybe July, August, September, somewhere in there. Not an usual time for us for a mayoral election. So you would think that Mason has an edge a little bit because he's a sitting lawmaker. He's got name ID. He's raised money.
You called him mixed on this one.
Well, here's the thing. Go back to when Dickert won a special election. The old mayor had to step down. Dickert beat Bob Turner, who was a sitting member of the assembly.
I remember.
At the time. There was an 11-way primary. Kim Plocke, who was state senator, she couldn't get through the primary. So there's no guarantee as a elected official lawmaker you can win that local race. The other thing is there's downside for some Democrats right now. Besides Mason, Eric Genrich, who's from Green Bay, the mayor up there, Jim Schmitz, facing a possible recall. At some point, he's not going to be mayor anymore, and Genrich has looked as a possible candidate for that mayoral office. These are bright, young lawmakers in that caucus, and they need bright, young people to get back from being the minority they're in right now. Mm-hmm. These guys run for other office, it drains a resource a little bit. Now, it also creates an opening for somebody else, but it drains.
In solidly Democratic seats, too.
Yes. So. But it drains a little bit of the knowledge that they have, some of the stars. And then finally, for following, we have self-insurance. I think we can agree that besides transportation, the other least popular piece of this budget right now is a self-insurance plan for health state employees.
Making a run for it, maybe Department of Revenue auditors, or not auditors, but tax collectors. But I would agree with you, falling, you know, the self-insurance plan. These agency briefings are a chance for legislators on the Finance Committee to make public how they view about these pieces of the budget. They're taking a very public stand on stuff like self-insurance, and it seemed like one after another was saying very publicly, I don't want this in there. You know, whether saying you basically put us in a corner on this thing, because the governor is saying this is $60 million in general purpose revenue that we're going to realize in savings in this budget, and I'm going to put that money towards schools. Legislators don't like that.
No, and I wrote about this a little bit last week for WisPolitics, but there's a debate on the committee about going to the base budget versus the governor's budget. And by going to base, you work off of current law. And if you do that, you work off of, there is no self-insurance proposal, right? But there also is no K-12, $649 million. You start from scratch, essentially. And I think lawmakers are trying to find a way on this committee to get around some of these proposals Walker has because they are politically difficult to deal with. If you don't want to fund, if you don't want to do self-insurance, great. But how do you make up the $30 million going to schools?
Right.
And $30 million going to raises for state employees and UW employees? That's going to be the difficulty for them.
Yeah. Same with the auditors. $30 million a year. You don't want those. How are you going to do it? Because there's no money in the ending balance, essentially. $87 million at the end of 2 years. There's just not a lot of wiggle room in this budget.
Yeah. Well, Sean, thank you for filling in for Steve Walters. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And that was Rewind for March 31st. Have a great weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.